Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast, sponsored by Faith Guitars. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Hello there.
And that's it. And on this week's episode, we're going to be discussing all the latest news in the world of guitars and taking questions from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. To join the discussion, follow the links in the description of this podcast or visit facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Now, we're also going to welcome aboard the Patreon train. As Mark, you suggested, we're now going to introduce all our new Patreons at the start of each episode. Just, you know, the new ones, the people of who have joined us. So
yeah, for those that have ponied up the $10, you're still going to get your mention in the song at the end of the episode, and that really is still a special place to be, contributing to Guitar Nerds at $10 a month. We're still going to give you an excellent shout out at the end, but we thought it might be nice, you know, as people sign up, just to welcome to the Patreon family, and give them a little shout out at the start of the episode.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you very much to Erin Montiel, to Paul Farrell, Andrew Pope, Mark Hadley, Ben Bollinger, Justin Setters. There have been a fair few this week. Jamie Dell and Carl Tucker.
That's because I brought it up last week and made everyone feel guilty for not contributing. You know, we're like 250 episodes in and people are really starting to feel that. They've been with us for probably over 300 hours if you factor in all the gear of the years and stuff like that. And now people are really feeling like, yeah, even at the $1 tier, I need to be giving something back to the Guitar Nerds.
Yes,
and, you know, that is much appreciated.
That was effective advertising by you last week. One more. There's a new addition to the $10 tier, a return, in fact. It's not really a new addition, of Joffrey Woggs, who's returned. He was previously on there as the TV Museum podcast, which is his podcast, which you should listen to. But he realized... I forgot that he'd messaged me and said, don't read out the podcast name, read out my name. And then I forgot. So he made it easy for me by cancelling his subscription and then reapplying with his actual name.
This podcast looks great. I mean, I literally know nothing about the Larry Sanders Show or indeed. I know a little bit about the Andy Griffith Show. But this looks all right. They discuss Friends. They discuss... what else? I'm going back. Remington Steel, great show.
Oh, fantastic show.
Classic bit of Pierce Brosnan.
Moonlighting? Do they discuss moonlighting?
There's no moon. Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of episodes.
As a child, I had a poster hidden on the inside of the door underneath my bed. Yeah. So my bed was one of those things, you know, it had like cabinets beneath
it. Like a cabin bed.
I guess so. There was a cupboard underneath the bed, but I realized that I could kick in the back wall of the cupboard and turn it into a secret hiding place. So I could go through the cupboard door into the back, and that was where I kept all my posters. So on the inside of the door to my cupboard, I had a poster of Bruce Willis in his big white hat that he wore in Moonlighting. that is 100% true.
The life of an early teenage Joe Branton was hiding Bruce Willis posters in a cupboard.
Yeah, that was it. It was obviously obviously a weird time for me, a troubling time for me. All my posters were either the tennis player Anna Kournikova or Bruce Willis.
Blimey.
Anyway, enough about me. NAMM is pretty much finished. Now, the reason it's just me and you this week, Mark, is obviously because Matt and Jay are both still at NAMM. It looks like they had a fantastic time.
The photos look good. Our most liked ever Instagram post is a picture of Matt clinging on to the oversized Boss Metal Zone that was on the Boss booth. 2,000 likes and counting. It's getting a lot of love.
All the work I put into the photo studio that I have set up for all the gear that we get sent, and he gets, whatever, 10 times the amount of average likes that we get on a post from standing next to a big pedal.
All you need is an oversized Metal Zone and everyone's suddenly in love. You know, it's fantastic.
The internet loves that stuff. Yeah, but 2020 NAMM, I think, looks like it was probably the best NAMM that I can remember, like, you know, in the last 10 years for gear, new releases and just popular stuff that people are getting excited about. I remember sort of a couple of years ago, NAMM was almost more about the personalities that were at NAMM than the products being released because you know, the products were so, you know, sort of mundane, I guess. But this year it just seems to be every single brand that you want to be releasing something has released something amazing. And then the brands that you've never even thought of releasing something amazing have also released something amazing.
Well, yeah, we're not even going to touch on Fender this week. As you know, we didn't even talk about Fender last week. We're not going to talk about it this week, so we're going to wait for Jay to get back. And even so, I think we've got more than enough releases here to cover the main podcast and the Patreon episode, and probably talk about a bit more next week as well when the other two are back and they can talk about the things that they saw at the show, what their faves were, and we cover all the Fender stuff as well. So
basically,
what we're saying is we're getting 3 weeks out of NAMM. Easy content. Real easy content.
Easy content for us. But yeah, it will be interesting to see actually how Matt and Jay, I mean, we know what Jay's going to like. It'll be interesting to see how Matt, if he differs in what he likes from what I think we like being back here and just seeing press releases and stuff, to see if anything really jumped out when he actually got to try things.
Did he actually get to try anything, or was he just working the whole time?
He did. It looks like he had a very successful last day at NAMM, wandering around on the Sunday trying out bits and bobs.
Good.
He really got to get around to a few things that I didn't expect him to as well. So I think he probably had a pretty good time, but I'm sure we'll hear about that next week. Also, kind of, I guess, for, you know, we talk about sort of new NAMM releases and we talk about new stuff on this podcast every week, what's coming out that's new. And I get excited about loads of things that are coming out. But whilst I might say it, I rarely ever am in a piece of gear puts me in the mindset where I'm like, oh, I do actually have to buy that. Because a lot of the time I'm like, this is very exciting, but I also own something very similar, you know, or something like that. But this year, for the first time in a long time, I'm like, there are actually things I have to buy.
Oh, you've just reminded me, I bought a guitar this week. We can talk about it in a minute, but let's talk about what your NAMM thing first, and then I'll talk about what I bought this week.
Yes, we should absolutely talk about that, because what you purchased was very cool. Now, it's just because, so here's the thing, the new Epiphone catalogue.
Yeah.
Obviously, we spoke about it last week before we knew the models. The models have come out now, have been released. We're not going to go over it because, we described them all, certainly from the picture, and it is what's expected. There are a few additions, but I'm sure we'll touch on that when Matt and Jay are back in the picture.
One thing we didn't talk about last week when we were talking about the Epiphones, I know we talked about the Texan that is coming out, the US-made Texan acoustic.
Yeah.
But I have also seen that they are doing a US-made Casino as well.
Really?
Yeah, let me just see if I can get up the...
That's very cool indeed.
Now, one of the details about it, and it looks, you know, if you're a Beatles fan, those are the two guitars, really, like the Texan and a Casino. They are two great guitars to be playing.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. Where was it?
But on the other things that Epiphone put out, which was very exciting, was, of course, and we spoke about last week, their new Les Paul Custom with the newly designed headstock, and of course the Les Paul Special, the Junior style guitar with two P90s. Both of those being in the range, both of those are incredibly affordable price points. And, you know, now with fixed headstocks, everything about them looks better. It looks like it's more than just a headstock upgrade. They look like absolutely fantastic guitars in I think both cases, like, you know, sub the £500 mark. Oh, so there's that. Do I get an Epiphone Les Paul Custom or a Les Paul Special? Or go on, Mark, what were you going to say about the casino?
Yeah, it looks like there's a US one coming, which is cool. That's all they had it on the booth. they had it on the booth. A few sites are running pictures and stuff of it and the headstock and stuff, and it looks great. But there's no details. It looks like the details are on their way.
Okay, so here's the thing, Mark and listener. It's like that on one side. We've got this incredibly affordable range of Epiphones. Let's not forget there's also an SG with a vibratone on it. That's also very cool. And then on the other side, we have these vintage Joe Does, which we spoke about last week. And they are coming with a tweed hard case for £599. That's a strap and a tweed hard case. And some of the coolest looking guitars, you know, you can ever see. They obviously have the Lucky Betty, which I went on about last week, which is a bound Strat style guitar with a single TV Jones style pickup in the bridge. But then a variable sort of a single to humbucker, splitty, tappy thing going on one of the controls. I mean, you know, for a sort of a guitar that's hitting that £500 mark, so we're talking just above entry level, but before we're getting on to the Serious Pro stuff, it's the sort of thing that, you know, I think most guitar fanatics could easily, you know, sell something and buy one of those four. So I'm in a huge dilemma now of whether I get one of the new Epiphones, whether I get a Joe Doe.
Well, I mean, there's also a few other things. So just looking at the list of things we're going to discuss in this podcast in terms of the news, there's a whole load of stuff in there that also could be fighting for your wallet. And I guess we'll talk about that when we do the news. But I mean, there's things from Harmony and things from Eastman and some more stuff from Vintage as well. Did we talk about the Vintage stuff last week as well as the Joe Doe? There's the new Relic range.
So actually there are two Relic ranges.
Okay,
so
well, let's come to that in the news then. But yeah, what I'm saying is there's lots of things fighting for your wallet.
Yes, I guess
in terms
so.
Of the Epiphone or the Joe Doe, I need to play them first. I need to see what those new Epiphones feel like. I think that's going to be the key thing is how they play, because they look spot on. But yeah, how do they play? Are they going to be... is it going to be like just the step down from the kind of USA made Gibson stuff, or is it going to be, you know, is it going to be any sort of upgrade over the current line? We'll have to see. Same for the Joe Does, actually. Obviously, you know, I'm very used to his custom stuff and know what that plays like, and it's custom build and very, very lovely, very expensive guitars. Be very interested to see how that's translated to a mass produced guitar from Vintage. So yes, very exciting stuff.
Yeah, super cool. Well, I guess then with kind of no further ado...
I want to talk about my new guitar.
Oh, sorry. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm very sorry. Yeah, talk about your new guitar.
This is basically a follow-up from last week when, during the podcast, I sent an email to a shop near me and said, have you still got this? Because I want to buy it. I saw it on your website. And so basically I bought a 90s Dan Electro DC-59, so the double cut
version. Such a good guitar, the DC-59.
The key thing being that it's one of the 90s ones, which for me, I love the build quality on those.
So the 90s ones, they didn't colour match the back of the neck, is that right? They went for maple?
No, this one is colour matched, and so same for the headstock. Is it matching headstock? No, not matching headstock, but it does have a painted neck at the back. It also has the dual concentric knobs, which I'm not normally a fan of on guitars, but I am a fan of on Dan Electros because they give you a whole range of tones on there. And it sounds, the key thing is, it's in peach, which is just one shade away from the guitar node's colour of choice, which is pink. And it looks amazing. It plays really nicely. I mean, you can tell, obviously, they're a budget instrument. It's not, you know, like... that you can feel the difference between like My Les Ball Jr. and this Dan Electro. But really nice thing to have around the house because it's so loud acoustically. So as well as sounding great when you plug it in, and those lipstick pickups do sound really good, it's really nice to just like have on the sofa and you can just noodle away. You get loads of volume out of it. Yeah, very, very cool thing indeed. I haven't put any pictures up yet, but I will do. I'll put them in the Guitar Nerds group.
That is super cool. Peach is an underrated colour. You don't see enough peach guitars. Maybe it's because of the dominance of Shell Pink at the moment.
It's like it's kind of got a slightly kind of browner finish than Shell Pink. It's hard to that doesn't sound nice, but it is. It's a slightly darker,
bit
slightly
more salmon-y.
Yeah, a bit more salmon-y to it, and it looks great. And I'm very happy. I've been wanting one of the '90s ones for a while, and I saw this pop up, and I was like, yeah, I will have that. So at the moment, we have the inventory is the Les Paul Junior. Obviously, that's going nowhere. The P bass going nowhere. And then in terms of other guitars that I'm actually playing, just the Dan Electro, which is super cool. And there's a couple of bits that I'm selling. So
wow,
yeah, slim.
So that's the Dan Electro. I guess that always happens with. It with you know anyone when they've got a new guitar, the new guitar becomes the main sort of sofa guitar, as it were, the guitar that you have out to play all the time.
Yeah, exactly that. That is the one that it's fun to noodle around on it. You know, it like plays nicely, sounds good acoustically, and yeah, just it's a cool thing. I was just thinking actually, the other guitar that I've got at the moment is the Sparkle Pink Strat. Squire Strat.
Oh, you still have that?
I still got it. It's under the sofa. That is the guitar that's waiting for mod mode. And again, you know, going back to Patreon, we're not that far off our goal of doing mod mode videos for exclusive for Patreon backers. We wanted to get to $1,500 a month. We're at $1,243 at the moment. So basically, we need 250-ish people who listen to the podcast to donate $1, and then we'll start doing mod mode videos. That'll be an ongoing series on Patreon. Or if you're feeling generous, you know, donate $5 or $10. We'll get there faster.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay. So I really feel at this stage we should dive headfirst into... Well, I'm going to pour myself a drink, and we're going to dive headfirst into a big old barrel of news. News! So, first up in the news, Mark Packham, talk to me about this very exciting new release from Line 6.
Yeah, Line 6 tend to use the NAMM show as a place to unveil brand new stuff. When I was there a few years ago, they do like a little kind of press conference slash gig, kind of almost like, you know, an Apple keynote. I don't know if they did it this year for the pod, but they have announced a new Pod Go, which is floor-based pod, I would say building off some of the technology they've been developing for Helix the HX range.
Big problem with this one.
Yeah.
It doesn't appear to be either red or kidney-shaped.
The pod has a history going back to, you know, Pod XT and Pod Live. Pod 3 Live, is that what it was called? I can't remember. There's always been floor-based pods.
Yeah, I know.
And yeah, this is the latest iteration. And
it is 1998 was the first pod.
Yeah, I know. It's a long time ago. We talked about this. We talked about this many times. Pod Go seems to be a kind of slightly stripped back, slightly more budget-friendly version of something like Helix LT. Seems kind of more in the range of, I guess, just an average gigging musician. MSRP is $629.99. That made sense, right, didn't it? $6,629. And so I'd imagine pound-wise they're going to be like $599 or $579.
Weird
like that.
Price point, this, because it's putting itself kind of in almost exactly the same area as the HXFX. And I appreciate... And that puts it in exactly the same place as the Stomp. I appreciate this that all three of those products offer something slightly different.
Yep.
But I would... Whilst they offer something different, wouldn't it make more sense to tier things price-wise rather than having just three things at the same price that offer, you know, slight differences on the same thing?
Yeah, again, I'd be really kind of keen to get my hands on this and go side by side with the other stuff, because I think, you know, they're claiming that it, you know, it uses amp, cab, and effect modeling from the HX processors.
It certainly does, yeah, and you've got the same ability to load in your IRs as you did with the Helix. Certainly, it looks like the all the effects are straight off of the Helix, as the as are the amp models. You know, that's very cool.
Yeah, the one thing that it's missing over something like the LT is that there's no XLR outs on the back, although they are saying that there's balanced outputs, so I assume the jacks on there are balanced for recording. It's basically a product to sit somewhere in between Helix LT and the Stomp, because you've got how many foot switches on the front?
Well, you've got eight, which is the same as the HX effects, and actually they're designated in the same manner as well. So you've got on the far left...
HX effects is different though, isn't it? Because it's just effects.
It's just the effects, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And this is offering a complete solution. You can download your own IRs into there. You can access all their amp models. It's wonderful. This the Pod Go, whilst I guess the word go sort of promotes this as being a product for actual gigging musicians, I think this is a completely fantastic studio tool, to be honest. But yeah, the eight switches lined out in the same way as the HX effects. So your far left two switches are your banking, then you've got an A, B, C, and D switch as your next four in a row, and then you've got your mode, which I assume which is switching between the modes. It says that it includes snapshot mode, which was the best thing for me about the Helix. Tough to explain snapshot to people who don't know don't use a Helix, but the snapshot mode is something that I think Boss dropped the ball on in not having anything that really did that on the GT1000. And then yeah, the other switch is the tuner and tap tempo, so exactly the same.
Yeah, just to give you an idea price wise, like UK pound price wise, as to where this sits in the range, HX Stomp right now is sitting at roughly £400,
right?
Like 395 ish. HX Effects is, hang on, let's have a look. HX Effects
can't be more than £500.
No, they are way less than that. In fact, they are at the moment, loads of UK stores have got them at £379. So, and then LT is quite a jump up. Again, price wise, you're looking at kind of like £749 is a lot of shops are selling them for at the moment.
Yeah.
So this actually does sit at quite an interesting price point, because it is somewhere in between the HX Stomp and HX Effects at the lower end.
I can't help but think that if I was going to spend sort of £500-£600 on the Pod Go, that I would drum up the extra £200 for a LT.
Yeah, but
LT.
Would you though? Realistically, what are the things that you need on the LT that this doesn't have?
Well, that's a very good point.
To me, it mostly looks like kind of functionally ins and outs on there are one of the main things. You know, if you need the XLRs, then obviously LT has the XLRs. It also has slightly bigger screen. There's a few other bits as well. But I mean, I just think that this is for someone who's been curious about the kind of getting into the world of Helix and this sort of this type of processor, but can't, you know, the LT might be too much when you're looking at, yeah, what did I say? Like 749-ish?
749, yeah.
And then obviously the full-size Helix is above that. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's actually a cool little unit, and I can see this doing very, very well indeed.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a fantastic unit. It's great to have the Pod brand back, and you know what, like Line 6 have absolutely changed their sort of their history over the last, well, whenever the Helix came out, and this is a fantastic addition. It's, you know, astute, it's the right sort of product for the way guitar players are interacting at the moment, and to make something more affordable is a great idea. You know, certainly when we're seeing things like, you know, we had the Kemper. What do they call the Kemper one? The Kemper floor? Sorry, I've totally forgotten what that is.
Yeah.
Whatever the Kemper one was called, the Kemper pedal board. And then, you know, you had the Neural DSP being teased, their version being teased, which was a $1,500 incarnation of what a Helix is. I kind of think Line 6 are going down the right route of making more affordable versions of things that have the same brilliant sounds that they had accessible on the Helix. This seems like the right product.
Yeah, it looks very sturdily built as well, which is always you know, a bonus for something you're going to be stamping on. Yeah, I'm into it. I think this is definitely the right move.
Absolutely.
Looks very, very good indeed.
Absolutely. Now, one of the most exciting new pieces of bass news from NAMM this year was incredibly surprising. It was that Ashdown have introduced their own basses. Now, they introduced four different body shapes with varying scale lengths available in some of those body shapes as well, which is pretty cool. Now, amp brands, when they move into the realms of making guitars, it is a really awkward transition unless you're going to introduce something incredibly boutique. It is a very difficult thing to do. For example, I think Friedman did a good job when they moved from... I mean, Friedman had the advantage of moving from making boutique amps into making boutique guitars. So they had that prestige that came with their brand from the start. But very difficult when you're an amplifier brand that, yes, Ashdown makes some fantastic top-of-the-range stuff for sort of £3,000 plus, but their bread-and-butter amplifiers are combos and, you know, sort of £500 to £700 heads. You know, they've really been focusing on their studio range and their entry level range, their Class D stuff recently. So they're and certainly you would say that their Mag series is probably the most seen in sort of student accommodation bass rigs, you know, in the world. So they're kind of a range that are thought of more, not especially for their high-end boutique stuff. So when they introduce basses, this is going to be problematic. It was problematic for Orange when they introduced their basses a couple of years ago. They introduced sort of a £300-£400, very cool-looking P-bass pickup, single-cut Les Paul Junior-style bass. But so tricky when you've got, you know, in their case, the big Orange logo on the headstock. It almost doesn't matter how good the bass is. It comes with a sort of, you're not really a bass manufacturer sort of review from the general public. So tricky thing for Ashdown to do. Now, Lee at Ashdown sent me a picture of these basses ahead of when they released, because, you know, because in Polymath, in my band, I'm endorsed by Ashdown Amps, I endorse Ashdown Amps, so I play all their gear. And Lee sent me pictures of the basses ahead of the... ahead of the release, and I was like, wow, these look just like Lackland basses, which I'm a massive fan of, being a big The Mars Volta fan. During the time period that The Mars Volta were recording the main bulk of their records, Juan Aldrete was playing a white Lackland jazz bass, so I'm always toying with the idea of getting a Lackland. They're certainly always in my like frequently searched things on Reverb. So, you know, I was like, oh wow, these look like Lackland. And of course Lackland aren't being made anymore, but Dan Lackin, he has his own Dan Lackin or D Lackin custom shop, and I've been looking at those, thinking about them, but they're a lot of money for Fender style guitars. So when Lee from Ashdown sent me through these pictures, I was like, these look a lot like Lackland's. And he was like, yeah, they're made by Dan Lackin. So this is a very long story, but Ashdown have actually got on board with one of the best bass manufacturers of the last, you know, 10-20 years, and got him to make these Ashdown basses. So they haven't made a mistake at all. These are fantastic instruments made by a very, very respected luthier, and they're putting them out at all of them are under £1,000 retail each. And they've introduced a Thunderbird style bass, they've introduced a precision style, a jazz style, and they've introduced one that is kind of more a completely unique shape. It reminds me of the sort of Reverend shape, a sort of almost lower half Music Man, upper half Jaguar is the best way I can describe it. But the great names, Low Rider is the name for the Thunderbird style bass. The Saint is the name for the weird Music Man Jaguar crossbreed. The Ark is the P bass, and the Grail is the jazz bass style bass. The Grail, the jazz bass, available in 30 inch and 34 inch scale length, starts £899. And, you know, it's a relatively standard range of colours that they've introduced them in, but my goodness, we just got Lackland instruments back, made by Ashdown at great prices.
I was going to stop you there, actually, because they are, in fact, still in production, the Lackland stuff.
It's Dan Lackin's left.
Exactly. So, yeah, the brand is still going. And to be honest, they still make some fantastic instruments. Just looking right now at some stuff that's actually available in the UK through some of the bigger stores still have them. And they still make, you know, a few of their classics. So the Daryl Jones, for example, great jazz alternative.
Absolutely fantastic. Such a really slight adjustment in shape on the Daryl Jones from standard jazz, but it looks lovely.
Yeah, and the hollow body, always really nice. Thought that was a good alternative for someone who, you know, perhaps was looking at like an old EBO or something like that, but wanted something. But yeah, I mean, I've always been a big fan of the brand. You know, they used to make the Duck Dunn signature P-Bass,
which was wonderful.
Always fantastic. But they were occasionally difficult to get hold of, and it looks like they're just coming into a few UK stores right now. So great to see another alternative out there. And I've always been a big fan of his designs, and these Ashdown basses look really good.
Yeah, I think a welcome addition, and I'm sure J. Cross won't be happy with the competition, but I really think at that sort of price point from such a respectable brand, I actually think this is going to be a real success for Ashdown. I think this is going to be a great new line of things that they've introduced.
Did you mention pricing or anything?
Yeah, I mean, everything's below £1,000. You've got things like the jazz bass starting at, like $899, which is which is a wonderful price for the sort of quality instruments you're going to be getting in this case. You know, there's nothing... They're not crazy. Like, the finishes are all pretty basic, standard block, just straight colours. But, they're going to be wonderfully built.
Yeah.
These are very, very cool instruments. Anyway, moving on, I guess, to something a little bit more out there. Mentioned a lot on our Facebook group recently, mainly by me, but Mark, talk to us about the new Harmony.
Yeah, so Harmony guitars, we talked about them a load in the Gear of the Year podcasts. They've just launched a brand new model to the standard series line. The Juno is hard to describe, really. I think we might have talked about it a few weeks back when we first saw some pictures of it, and then we were going to wait until there was some stuff announced for NAMM. So the idea of the Juno is a slightly smaller body guitar. They describe it as perfect grab-and-go guitar. Take it anywhere you want to go. I would say it's kind of Les Paul Junior-ish. Les Paul Special-ish, because it's two pickups, single volume control, and then a three-way switch. But the body shape is significantly smaller than, firstly, anything else in their line, but also smaller than most guitars. Still a full 25-inch scale length with a regular C-neck profile, they describe it as. So I think in terms of feel, it's not going to feel particularly different from playing regular electric guitar. But the body shape is very, very small, and it almost looks... it looks kind of undersized.
Well, it's a reissue, essentially, of the Harmony H44 Stratotone, which was the original model. The difference with the H44 is it was very much released as a junior guitar. So in the case of the H44, it had an acoustic guitar bridge, and then it just had one mini humbucker in the neck position.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, actually. I've seen these guitars before, and I didn't even connect the dots on this one.
Yeah. They've essentially, what Harmony have done, have modernized, ironed out all those creases, given it a decent pickup selection, a proper bridge. They've made it suitable for a modern player, whereas, these old, they were made in like the mid-50s, the old Harmony H44s, and they ooze so much cool, it's almost unbelievable. But I'm sure when it comes to application, certainly to more modern forms of music, the H44 is going to be relatively limited. Guitar Nerds is brought to you in association with Faith Guitars. Based right here in the UK, Faith Guitars are designed by British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle, who has been hand-building guitars for decades for some of the biggest names in the business. Founded in 2002, Faith Guitars have been voted the UK's best acoustic guitars 5 times in a row by both the public and panels of music industry experts, so you can be confident in your new Faith guitar. Like all quality acoustics, Faith guitars are made of all solid tone wood, so you can be sure they'll start off sounding great and improve year on year. Faith don't use laminated woods. But you'll be pleased to know that despite the all-solid tone woods, the superb specification and handmade construction, Faith guitars are still affordable, with prices starting at around £450 or $600. Discover the range at faithguitars.com and then visit one of the many UK or European retailers to try them for yourself. But hold up! If you're in the USA or Canada, you can buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com. And by using the coupon code NERDS at the checkout, you can get an exclusive 10% discount. So, in the UK and Europe, check out the guitars at your local dealer or faithguitars.com. But for North American listeners, buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com and use the coupon code NERDS for a special 10% off at the checkout. That's USA coupon code NERDS at the checkout. Faith Guitars, award-winning acoustics designed right here in the UK.
Yeah, in fact, in terms of the, you know, updating things, so it's two P90s in there, although they don't look like traditional P90s.
No, they're like gold foil P90s.
Yeah,
they've also gone for, it's fan fretted, seven string, they're microtonal frets
sure,
as well.
Sure. No, the update that I was going to suggest is that there's a push-pull knob on there as well. So you've got what they describe as two tonal presets. So as well as the three-way switch and the volume control, there's also the two... I guess it's going to be like a filter of some sort, I'd imagine.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that. That's great. That's a wonderful addition.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, very keen to try one out.
Do you know what? When I saw these get posted, it's such a cool guitar. I've never seen so many guitarists complain about not having a tone knob. Like, honestly, when was the last time anyone ever used a tone knob? And all of a sudden, because this guitar didn't have one, out of the woodwork everyone came. But that's cool. So there are actually tonal presets on this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so you've got some options there despite not having a tone knob, as you say. The only thing I'm disappointed at in looking at pictures of the H44 is that there's kind of like an orange metallic that they used to do it in.
Are you joking? Are you building into this?
What? No, I'm not building into anything.
Yeah, Harmony have introduced a new colour for this model, Rose, which is their sort of metallic orange red.
Is it the same colour though? Because I'm looking at... Oh yeah, champagne. Yeah, in fact, because I haven't seen a picture of the Rose one. I've seen champagne and pearl white.
Yeah, those are the colours they're leading with, certainly. But they've introduced a new colour for this guitar, which was not available on the other three models that they launched the brand with. But
I'm looking at a picture of it now, though. It's like way more red. It's way more red, the Rose finish. Whereas the other one, it was like a metallic orange, kind of copper. I guess the closest one is actually the champagne, which is kind of like a grey sparkle.
I know the colour that you're actually talking about.
I wish they would do that. If you're going to make one and for me to buy it, it needs to be in the sparkly orange.
They have an absolutely fantastic range of colours to choose from in the original Harmony line. I still think they're doing a fantastic job of it. And I'm sure as the brand continues to expand, they'll introduce more colours.
Yeah, definitely. I'm so excited about what they're going to do with Harmony in the next 12 months. Be really interesting to see what else they release and how it performs end of year, gear of the year time. But yeah, I think the Juno is a great step in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, speaking of kind of weird, cool boutique guitars, Fano guitars have introduced for the first time an affordable line of instruments. Now, whenever I use the word affordable, I always get flack from people. This is a custom shop, brand, and they have introduced a range of guitars that are all around the $1,000 mark. I think that is an accessible price point in terms of what that company normally put out. So this is the Omnis series by Fano, and it includes, I think, four different models in the Omnis series. Each one fantastic, obviously all of them incredibly affordable. So they have the GF6, which is very much a Starcaster style offset hollow body, sort of offset 335 style guitar. And you know, even in that, they've offered something for everyone. These ones are $999. They're doing it in like a Daphne blue with like a little white guard, and then you can get it in black with a torque guard, or in a two-tone sunburst with a black guard, all with cream binding, double humbuckers. This is absolutely, I mean, if you've seen the Fano headstocks, it's incredibly cool. It follows the line of all kind of these sort of modern come retro boutique manufacturers doing that two-tone headstock. So it looks amazing, and to get something from this brand at this price point, I think is absolutely fantastic. Then they've introduced the MG6, actually reintroduced it. I think that's a guitar that they have had available before, the MG6, which is fitted with two P90s. That's very much a Mustang style guitar, but it's got something of an old Harmony about it as well, slightly sharper edges and more of a hard top, less rounded at the edges. Whilst it's not bound, it certainly looks like it could be. A very gorgeous sort of premium Mustang. Again, this one available in a Daphne blue, this time with a torque guard, and then a white and a candy apple red as well, which look absolutely fantastic. They've then also released the JM6 and the SP6. The JM6 is a Jazzmaster, as you would expect, and that one is probably the closest to a, you know, everything else kind of has a bit of a Fano vibe about it. The JM6 is very much a sort of Jazzmaster-esque guitar. But crucially, what's very important about the Jazzmaster is it is $849 and it is available in Burgundy Mist.
That's the dream for Joe Branton.
Absolutely the best colour of all time. But the SP6, I think, is the best thing that Fano have released, because it is... Do you remember, Mark, we were talking about... Who was it? Was it Cort who released a bolt-on...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Les Paul Jr. with a Telecaster pickup in the bridge and a P90 in the neck.
Yeah, almost exactly this guitar. So I'm not sure if you're aware, Joe, but so the Fano models go all the way from the Omnis series, which are the ones we're talking about right now. And yeah, like you said, something like an SP6, you're looking at $849, I think is the the price they list on their site. But all of the models kind of continue all the way up through the range. So after that, you get the standards. And again, it's basically the same guitars. There's a few other options, including a bass. But like, for example, the JM6, you then jump up to about $2,000 on those guitars. And then after that, you can then have, you know, custom-built stuff and the master-built stuff and things like that, which go up to about $3,500. But what I really like about it is this is basically a custom shop builder thinking, okay, I've got these great designs, and I want to bring them back into price points that are affordable. So again, you know, you've got the custom builder stuff, then you come down to the standards, and then you come down to this brand new line, which is the Omnis series, or Omnis, maybe? I assume it's Omnis. And for things like the SP6, which is a guitar that I've always looked at and thought, oh, you know, I love Tellys, I love Juniors, this looks fantastic. But to be honest, I'm never going to spend... I wouldn't even really go up to the standard pricing, which is, like I said, about $2,000. But $849, what's that going to come down to in pounds? Probably about £700, £750, something like that.
It's
almost a bit of a no-brainer.
I wouldn't own a Fano for £700.
Totally. And it's exactly the same design. So, yeah, in terms of looks, they've not really changed anything. It's just you're getting... A very similar guitar at three different kind of spec points, three different manufacturing styles. The Fano range just totally makes sense to me. All of these guitars look amazing. SP6 is, you know,
they should be immediately sold out and overordered on these at this sort of price point.
Well, just looking at it now, it looks like you can't buy direct from their site on the Omnis. Let's have a look. No, can't buy direct from them. Has anyone in the UK got them yet? Let's have a look.
I doubt that. I don't think they've got UK distribution.
They have. They've got some shops. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have. Let's have a look. What have they got? None of the Omnis yet, but I assume they'll be on their way.
Yeah, I mean, it's been released. It's NAMM. I mean,
I think they'll be very, very popular.
I mean, who wouldn't want one of these? Like, if you saw this in a shop alongside the competition at this sort of price point, I think it is an absolute no-brainer. This could be the year of Fano guitars. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, definitely super excited about seeing those more affordable SP6s, because that might be the one guitar that I buy this year.
Yeah, an incredibly wise choice if you do. Now, next up, our friends at Orange have had a little run of releases for NAMM this year. Nothing big, literally nothing big. They seem to have become obsessed with small things. Mark Packham.
Indeed. Well, Orange have always been good at kind of doing big sounding stuff in small boxes. I mean, they've obviously done the other thing as well, which is make big sounding stuff in incredibly big boxes. But, you know, recently with things like the Tiny Terror and the Bass Terror, they've managed to kind of bring some of that down into smaller, more movable gear. And even more so this year. So two new bass releases from Orange. You've got the Little Bass Thing, which is a 500-watt portable bass head that I guess they're taking cues from all of the small heads that we've seen ever since Mark Bass really brought this kind of idea to the market. They are using, it's a Class D output stage, I believe. Let me just...
It is, that's right.
Yeah, 500-watt Class D powerhouse is how they describe it. And I had a quick listen to the demo. What I like about it is it's got a great range of tones. It's going from super modern to some more, characteristically Orange sounds,
which is not usual for Orange. I mean, certainly when they released the Terror bass head, yeah, fine, everyone bought it, but everyone sounded the same.
Like, yeah,
the EQ literally did nothing on that head.
Yeah, so you've got, in terms of EQ on here, you've got a 4-band EQ, I believe.
So two controls for the mids.
Yes, I believe two controls for the mids. Let me just get that spec. Sorry, we're rattling through loads of news and yeah,
sorry, have I gone a little too fast for you there?
No. I just haven't got the spec in front of me. But it looks like 4-band of EQ, and then you've got volume and gain on there. You've also got a... Let me just check. This is a man reading the internet. It's what you're paying for, Patreon backers. Yeah.
So you've got a built-in compressor on the little bass thing, which is quite cool.
Yes. And, it's not the gain. You've got compression control.
You've
on
got
there.
Yeah. There's
DI output, effects loop, and 60 dB input pad. You know, all the things that you would expect from a modern bass amp. But yeah, the key thing is go and listen to the demo that Orange produced, because it sounds fantastic. And like you say, everyone who buys one of these is not going to sound all exactly the same, which was kind of... You know, the Terror bass head had a very characteristic sound, and this is definitely aimed more at your kind of session player.
Yeah,
I
mean, certainly they got a session player in for their video, which is unique for Orange, because normally they just go for some sort of all out, you know, rock or metal guy. But yes, I actually think this is Orange branching out a little bit. And trying to have something for someone else. And you're right, as you say, sort of more along the mark-based market. I don't know how much dominance mark-based have anymore, because I've been so long sort of out of a base department in a shop. I don't know what the kids are buying.
Just for, in terms of like gigs that I go to, the bass is always, I mean, I would say it's a pretty open playing field, but I do see a lot of mark bass. I think it's mostly because of the kind of gigs that I go to, you know, there'll be people that are traveling in cars, or they'll be traveling on the train or the bus. So I do see a lot of little marks out there still, you know, still going.
On the scene that I see a pretty even split between Orange and Ashdown,
okay,
and then Dark Glass coming up really fast.
Yep.
Certainly with the more proggy bands, because of course, you know, you're going to punk shows and I'm going to math rock shows, but the math shows, we obviously have a lot of prog bands and things like that. And when you get onto sort of the post-metal side of prog, we're seeing an awful lot of Dark Glass, some real dominance from that end of things.
Interesting to know, yeah, because like I said, from my perspective, it's, you know, I think people are buying mark bass because it is a kind of go-to small amp, you know.
The problem with mark bass is they don't drive very well.
Yeah.
And you know, which is totally fine. I mean, why wouldn't you want a clean pedal platform and then deal with everything on the floor? But certainly for a lot of bass players and what I do, people tend to like to drive things, which is why you see a lot of Ashdown ABMs. They've got a separate, like, valve driving control that you can bring in and out to drive that preamp. And yeah, you see a lot of Orange. You certainly see a lot of people shelling out the extra wedge for the AD200, the Orange AD200, which is got to be one of the best sounding bass heads of all time. But you know, still, it's
also one of the biggest.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's not half the size of an Ashdown CTM 300.
That's true, or an SVT, a big SVT Classic or something. Yeah, exactly. I guess that's true. That's true.
Exactly. But I think great product, great idea.
Yeah, be really interested to see if the kind of uptake from this is, I wonder if it's going to be taken up by people that want that kind of little mark experience, but they love the Orange brand.
Absolutely.
I wonder if that's where this is going to go. And if we do, then that's great. Be curious to see that.
Orange, one thing I think sort of Orange were a little bit lucky almost releasing this year in the Ampeg. Still, obviously, Ampeg are now part of the Yamaha family, but we still haven't seen any big new releases from Ampeg, which, you know, will be very exciting when they do come.
Yeah.
But had Yamaha relaunched Ampeg this year, I think Orange competing with a 500-watt entry-level amplifier, it could have really gone the other way for them. This is, don't get me wrong, a fantastic product. I would... If I was going to give advice to brands like Orange and Ashdown right now, it would be make more big valve heads, because, you know, as soon as Ampeg come back.
Tough market, though. Tough market, big valve heads, because there's only, you know, you're limiting the amount of people that can actually buy the product, because, you know, if I play a bit of bass every now and then, there's absolutely no way I'd be buying a big valve head.
But I don't understand why bass players have this obsession with weight and size. Like, we don't talk about this with the guitarists. Like, a guitarist would be fine to bring whatever valve head. In fact, you would almost still, like, the Katana is almost the first product that's kind of getting over the sort of laughter factor.
I mean, you say that, but, like, how many bands gig with, like, a Blues Junior and, for example, like a Marshall 1974X, you know, where there's no, you know, little combos.
I think, not in what I see, but sure.
But I mean, I think the difference is, like, bass combos generally haven't been very good. So it means you have to have, if you have a big bulky head, then you also have to have big bulky cabs, at least one, sometimes two. Whereas this reduces some of that. You know, if you've got a little Orange head or a little mark bass or whatever, and some lightweight Neo cabs, you can still get a very good bass sound out of that. And you don't necessarily need a big rig. Anyway, I think they're going to do very well with the little bass thing. I'd be curious to see who's buying them. And I think, like I said, it will be people that have previously thought about getting a small bass head, but there's not been a kind of rock-focused solution for them. And the Orange brand and the fact that there's a compressor in there and stuff kind of towards that a little bit. So
yeah.
So yeah, it's a cool product. The other base product that Orange released is the Bass Butler, described as basically a bass rig in a floor pedal. So this
but it's not a power amp, right? It's just a preamp.
Exactly that, just a preamp. So I guess this is kind of swimming in the same waters as something like a Sans amp.
Or the Bax Banjitar,
also the Bax Banjitar. But, I guess the Bax Banjitar... Yeah, that was just preamp stuff, wasn't it?
That was just a preamp. Yeah, that was just, that was your Rocoverb 50 in preamp form, essentially. This is them doing the same thing, I guess, but for bass.
Yeah, similar. Actually, just thinking about it, the DI outs on this do have cabinet simulations on there.
Yeah.
So there is some element of kind of
so
modeling
this is a
Sans
amp
as well. Yeah, I mean, it's a direct recording solution or, direct out to the PA. The key thing about it, though, is that it's got two channels on there. So you've got a bass channel, which is always on, and then a selectable guitar channel on there as well that deals with the kind of top-endy drive. So if you want that kind of classic, almost like bi-amped bass sound where you've got the low rumble but you've got a lot of kind of grind on the top end, this will do that, and it's selectable as well, so you can almost use it like a drive pedal, where you have your bass sound and then you kick in the grindy guitar sound as well. I was really impressed by this. Actually, the demo is super, super impressive and definitely worth your time having a listen. There's also some good information there about like the routing, because you can split the signals as well. You can send the guitar channel one way, you can send the bass channel one way, or you can combine them. It just sounded great. And I think if you were after a very quick and decent solution for going straight into a desk, whether that be for recording or whether you want it for live use, this certainly gives some competition to the Sans amp. I liked it a lot. Sounded fantastic.
Yes, yeah, I bet. Now, there's one more product from Orange.
There is. The Orange Stomp.
The Orange
Stamp.
Stamp.
Even. The Terra Stamp. Yes, not the Stomp. The Terra Stamp. So, this is a hybrid 20-watt valve guitar amp pedal. So, floor-based 20-watt amp.
This this truly is the year of pedal board amplifiers.
Yeah.
This is exciting. Now, so it's 20 watt, it's valve pre, so I guess this is the same as the Micro Terra, but with an on-off switch.
Yeah, and also louder? How loud is a Micro Terra?
20 watts.
Oh, right, okay, fine. So, yeah, I guess it's a kind of similar floor solution to that, really. Like you say, on-off
switch was
on.
Which was a big problem with the Micro Terra. It was a wonderful sounding amp, but it looked like a toy. And then it had this really awkward power supply because it ran on there's the little power supplies you get for pedals, which I know this one will as well. But this one's on your board. That one was an amp head. You put something like that on top of a cab, and it's got the transformer hanging out the back, pulling on it as well. You're just as likely to rip out than you are to actually be able to play anything with it. So this is a much better solution for what was a fantastic product in the Micro Terra.
Yeah, and actually the foot switch on there is not an on-off switch. The foot switch is a volume switch. So you've got two volumes on the Terra Stamp, and you can basically jump between them. It's a master volume on-off.
I love that.
Which... yeah, it means that you can get a nice boost for solos or boost for a particular part of the song or whatever. It gives you two different volume levels. This looks cool. Again, I think a lot of people will be buying these as a kind of a backup. If something fails while you're out doing a gig, this would be the perfect solution for that. Slip it into your gig bag. £149. It's going to save you from, digging an amp out from somewhere else.
Has a cab sim out as well if you were playing on headphones
totally.
Or you want to go straight into a door.
Yep, exactly that. Yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's a cool little product. Anything like this that can help you out, if you can slip it into a gig bag and it's basically your amp for the night, I think
at that sort of price point, it's almost five times cheaper than the other competition that we'll talk about or hopefully talk about on this podcast if we get to it. Certainly we were talking things about the Milkman, the amp, 100, their new edition. Again, fantastic fantastic piece of equipment. But when we're talking about pedal board amplifiers, the fact that Orange are offering the same thing at such an incredibly affordable price point, I appreciate not nearly as much headroom. But nonetheless, a gigging solution at, you know, sub £200 is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think we will talk about some more pedal board amps, but I think it's going to have to be in the Patreon because we're nearly up at time, right?
Well, we are. Yeah, I'm going to do one more product, and then we're going to take some questions. We're going to take two questions, and then we'll be in the Patreon. I reckon we can do that.
Yeah, sounds good. That sounds good to me.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Fine. Okay. So, we're trying to get through, guys, as many products as we can. I appreciate we're just sort of hammering you with gear and being less funny than normal, but there is so much stuff and there's so much cool stuff that we're so excited about and we really think you should be as well, that we just want to talk about it. And one of the things that I'm most excited about, now I put this in the Facebook group as well, I was incredibly excited that Chase Bliss have finally put a time on their preamp coming out. The preamp that we're talking about is obviously their this new pedal design for Chase Bliss. It's a slightly wider, broader...
The Automatone. Is that the one that you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about the preamp Mark IV. Yeah, I think it's Mark IV. I can't remember off the top of my head. Is it also called the Automatone? I didn't know that. I don't think it is.
No, the Automatone is another pedal.
Yes, yeah, okay. So I'm talking about the preamp, which is the pedal that they had a prototype of last year at NAMM, and it was a wider format, dual foot switch, and it came with a range of faders, but they were mechanically preset faders, so they would automatically...
No, wait, that is the Automatone. Mark II, Automatone Mark II preamp.
Oh, is that what they're calling it?
Yeah.
See, that's how much I don't remember names. Sorry, yes, the Mark II preamp Automatone, I'm sure listeners were screaming at us whilst I... fumbled that one.
But as always, yes, nothing doesn't change anything.
No, exactly. But fantastic pedal. Very exciting that preamp was coming into existence. And then, I'm not even talking about that pedal. Just to double whammy us with cool stuff, Chase Bliss have teamed up with Meris, which apparently they've been planning for years. They've teamed up with Meris and in the same style chassis, complete with faders, preset buttons and dual foot switches, they have released a collaboration pedal, the CXM 1978, which is both companies take on the Lexicon 224, which was a unit made until 1978, a digital studio reverb unit. So this is absolutely... Now, there's no price confirmed on this pedal, but if it's like the preamp, then it's going to be in upwards of sort of $750. So we're talking about a very expensive pedal, but nonetheless, I really think this is one of the best sounding reverbs you'll ever hear. Go and watch the reverb, as in reverb.com, demo that they've done with the fellas from Chase Bliss, because it sounds absolutely amazing. It's just simple hall room plate reverb, but because of the tone shaping that you can do with the actual mix presets, EQs and post delay, you can get some gorgeous shimmeresque tones, the most ethereal reverb you've ever heard, and then, you know, at the flick of a button, the most organic amp sounding reverb that you'll ever hear.
I love that consistently can't pronounce ethereal. It's my favorite thing. You said ethereal. I love that it's consistent as well. It's not whenever you've talked about it, it's not like you messed it up once. Every time you say that word, you say something completely different. I love it.
I don't know how I do that. It's weird. I think it's like, you know, when I used to, for a long time, I used to pronounce the word unique, uncue.
No, you didn't. Leave it out. That's ridiculous. In terms of the naming on this, I think both these pedals are actually branded Automatone. And it looks like, I mean, essentially, there's two pedals, the preamp and now this CXM 1978 Automatone. So I wonder if this, basically, they're going to do a range of pedals potentially that are all Automatone that are in this housing. I wonder if that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. But honestly, listener, go and watch the video. I think I appreciate that the price point of these pedals is probably going to be is going to be something that's going to switch some people off. But I think it is a wonderful sounding reverb. I, for one, am very, very excited about it. Now, you know, that is, we've got so much more news to do.
We've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of the podcast running order has 12 more to do.
Well, that's okay. We've got a whole podcast. We can still, we've got a whole Patreon episode, which we can, you know, get through the rest. But,
yeah, but the first one's called The Mini Bar. We're going to be talking about you boozing probably for the first 10 or 15
that's
minutes.
That's true. But Mark, what's that I can hear?
No, don't agree with that. You've made the wrong choice.
Oh, yes.
Year.
That's...
No, don't agree with that. You've made the wrong choice this year. No,
the question, Mark.
Oh, you played me this jingle earlier. I hate it.
That was the question mark jingle. Yeah, because your name Mark can have a question mark, which means it is time for the question part of this podcast. So we're going to take some questions from our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Okay, so we're only going to take a couple. So I'm gonna take. I've got one question that's a little off topic, but I knew you'd enjoy to answer it, Mark. So one question for you and then one question for me that are both moderately off topic. So Pete Norman says, obviously Guitar Nerds is the world's number one podcast and my personal favourite.
True dat. It is the world's number one podcast. Not even just guitars. It's the world's number one podcast.
It is just the most listened to podcast in the world. But which podcasts do you guys listen to regularly? They don't have to be guitar related. He's just interested. So for Pete, Mark Packham, what podcast are you listening to at the moment? It's probably the guy who consumes the most podcasts out of all of us.
So I've actually just grabbed my phone because I've got a podcast app on here. Currently subscribe to 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16.
Well, just say
18,
which ones.
20, 22, 24, 26, 28, 30, 31. Podcasts,
right?
Not all of which put out episodes regularly, but there's a few I want to give a specific shout out to. Number one, Bad Things. They've only done one episode. This is my brother's podcast, which he started this week. It's him and his friend review bad stuff, like things that are culturally significant for their badness. So yeah, check that out. Bad Things. This week they talked in depth about Arc Music Factory, which was the studio behind Rebecca Black's Friday. And they delve into the history of the Arc Music Factory and
very
talk about some of the other artists that they produced. That's worth listening to. I enjoyed it a lot. You know, it's a bit weird to hear my brother's voice for 2 hours, but yeah, the episode was cool. I also listened to a podcast called The Dummy Room, which is a great punk rock podcast, more on the side of like Ramonesy punk rock. They talk to various artists in the genre, and they do like, you know, ranking a certain band's albums in order of which ones are their favorite. They're two really good dudes who run that. I like that a lot. I also, on a guitar thing, I would say listen to the Get Offset podcast. Very, very interesting. It's a guitar podcast, but they delve into more than we do. You know, we generally stick to the news and we stick to a lot of product-based stuff. That's what we're known for. That's what we do best. Get Offset, there's, you know, they delve into, like, how to put it? It gets heavier. Let's just say that. Let's say that, and I enjoy that a lot. And then, yeah, just some classics. Listen to the Giant Bombcast. That's my fix of gaming stuff. And I've really been enjoying My Dad Wrote a Porno recently, which is something that I resisted listening to for a long time. It's a podcast where one of the presenters' dads has written an erotic novel and they read it out. I'm sure people that listen to this podcast have heard about it. It's one of the biggest British podcasts in podcasting history. Shamefully, I'm just catching up on it now, and I like it a lot.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Wonderful. Well, that is an awful lot of podcasting.
I like podcasts a lot. It's my main thing that I do. I would say, in fact, I can give you some stats. I've had this phone for 3.5 years, and in that time, my total combined time listening to podcasts is 203 days. So out of roughly 1,000 days... ish, bit more than that.
How many days do you get in a year? 1,000?
What's wrong with you? I would say, so yeah, I've out of roughly 1,000, maybe 1,200 days, I've listened to 200 full days of podcasts in that time.
That is impressive.
Basically, if I'm not doing a podcast with you, I'm listening to a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually only listening to one podcast at the moment.
Guitar Nerds.
No, I'm listening to the Whiskey Cast.
Of course, that all makes sense.
It's very, very good. No, I've actually recently got very, very into whiskey. Did we mention this on the podcast that I went on like a whiskey course?
No,
and I learned how to blend and how flavors work, and I also I went on like a day's seminars about the history of whiskey. I mean, it was a seminar for a day about the history of whiskey, but approximately every 20 minutes you were given a new dram of whiskey that involved whatever was being spoken about. So by the end of the 6 hours, it was, it was anyone's game.
Yes, I bet. I bet you don't remember much of it. It's not great value for money, that tour.
I tell you what, I actually think I remember a lot more than most people because I think, you know, I drink much more consistently than the average person. But I did find that I was incredibly interested in it. And so, you know, as with guitars, I figured, well, maybe I should start a podcast on whiskey, only to discover that it is an incredibly well-beaten topic. You know, there are lots of people making fantastic whiskey podcasts out there. Whiskey Ginger was also very good. I enjoyed that. I've been trying to get into them as they go, but yeah, the Whiskey Cast is certainly the one that that I like the most. Despite being American hosts, I think their knowledge on Scottish and Irish whiskey is very, very good.
Well, if they're whiskey experts, then yes, I'd imagine it would
well
be.
Well, yes, but there's whiskey with an E or without. And I was concerned that a whiskey podcast was going to be dominated by bourbon drinkers, sort of thing.
Got it.
But it seems to not be predominantly. There seems to be a really good appreciation for, you know, for Scotland and their, you know, introduction of the blended whiskey, and Ireland and their, you know, faithful consistency with single malts, and then of course Japan coming out of nowhere to redefine what whiskey is, certainly over the last few years. So
I know literally nothing about whiskey.
It's fine. You know, technically it by Scottish standards, a lot of the Japanese stuff isn't whiskey because the Scottish stuff has such strict laws on what can go into a drink to make it whiskey. So there's, you know, but nonetheless, whiskey is really cool. Anyway, we're going to do one more question. This one's more geared up for me. Matthew Hunt said he'd like to know what my current touring rig is. So I thought I'd answer that one. Do you know what my current touring rig is, Mark?
No. Ashdown, I'd imagine. And I don't know what, I don't even know what bass you're taking out. Surely there's only one gigging bass that you ever need. So that's the one.
Okay, fine. So from amplifier through to guitar then, at the moment I am touring an Ashdown CTM-300 valve head, which weighs an absolute ton. Honestly, you know, the only thing heavier than it is the massive flight case that I had to get for it to be able to take it around places. But yeah, the CTM-300 is Ashdown's kind of take on an SVT Classic, that sort of thing. So very, very good, super big, all valve head. And I run that into a 115 cab that I've had custom made by Ashdown. So it's Ashdown some years ago did a classic range of cabs, which were black Tolex with a red mesh. And I had that cab opened. I had cotton wool lined. The old Ampeg cabs from the 70s had a cotton wool lining in order to get rid of a lot of that top end. So I had it filled with cotton wool for that reason. So I'm running into one of those cabs. Then on the floor, I am still using the Boss MS3. I had a brief flutter with the Helix LT, but that I've resigned to studio use, and I am back to the Boss MS3 being the main sort of brain of my pedal board. But then the actual effects I run into are very limited because I have realized that the built-in effects on the MS3 are absolutely as good as you need them to be in many cases. So the effects that I'm running into them is obviously a compressor, and with a compressor you have to have a good compressor. You can't cheap out on a compressor. You just have to get something fantastic and just make sure it's the right compressor for you. So in my case, I'm using the Origin Effects, their Cali bass compressor, which is very, very good indeed. A random control that actually has on it is a low cut, which is surprisingly for a bass compressor, very, very useful for getting rid of some of those really super woolly, unwanted tones, depending on the room that you're playing in. So a really good interactive studio style reverb. And then drive wise, I'm using the Hudson Electronics Broadcast, just the simple 3-control broadcast with the switchable gain control, and I have it on the low gain mode all the time. That's just my standard overdrive on and off. And then if I need super drive, then I'm actually using the built-in drive on the MS3 to add to the broadcast sound. And then my modulation, which I did post the other day. I'm going through a little bit of I was unsure between the Free the Tone Tri-Avatar Chorus and the Boss DC2 Dimension Chorus, because they're both such fantastic, kind of vibrant, three-dimensional chorus sounds. And I have chorus on all the time, you see. I never turn it off. So I was going to have one of those two pedals. I actually chose neither of them and went back to a pedal that I previously had on my board, which was the Strymon Deco.
I can't believe you use that on bass.
Why not? Why is that?
It just seems like a funny pedal to use on bass. I can't imagine it's geared up for it particularly, but I mean, if you make it work, it works.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about the Deco is you've got two sounds on there. One thing that's quite nice is because the next thing in chain is that I play jazz basses at the moment. And I find jazz basses can be a little thin sounding. I really love how articulate they are, and I love the single coil on the bridge. In conjunction with chorus, it makes your harmonics sparkle a lot more, which is why I really like jazz basses at the moment. But they can sound a bit thin, and that's actually where the Deco comes in really handy, because the Deco is a dual foot switch pedal, and it's like a vintage effects unit. So on one side you have like tape saturation, which you can... I have just over halfway, and I have it on. So this sits out of the chain of the MS3, just on all the time. And that tape saturation just makes everything woolly again. Yeah. So everything that the jazz bass sort of thins out gets really thickened at the end by the Strymon Deco. And then the second control is sort of the tape, as it were, how that tape is being manipulated if it was a vintage effect. So you can have anything from sort of flange to chorus to doubling to slap back at the very extreme. So I have it just in a sort of chorusy territory, obviously, because I'm using it instead of a chorus pedal. But really, the Strymon Deco, absolutely fantastic pedal. I see exactly what you mean. It's not a very bassy pedal, but for the specific and very specific application that I have it for, it's wonderful. But I can see how it could be a little bit much when I change to a different bass, it could well be something that will have to come off. I think it specifically works with thin sounding basses.
Yeah. To just the thick, I mean, that's kind of the point of the Deco in general, isn't it? To thicken up the sound of everything.
Yeah,
give it that real old tape style sound.
Yeah, it's a Telecaster's best friend, but you're never going to use it with a Les Paul.
No, well, I mean, maybe. I reckon you could still use it. You can still make a Les Paul sound pretty bright. It just depends on how you use it.
Yeah. Yes, I guess that's right. Anyway, that pretty much brings us up to time. Oh God, I got my script wrong then, Mark. I was sort of getting carried away talking.
Why do you need a script? We do this every week.
Well, yeah, it's an important scripting moment. So now we're drawing towards the end of this week's free episode.
I love
of the
you
Guitar
even script
podcast.
That bit. You're ridiculous. You're a ridiculous man.
You can, of course, listen to the entire extra episode of Guitar Nerds every week over on our Patreon site, patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can also find it in the description of this podcast episode. This week on our Patreon episode, we're going to be talking about, well, we've got the other half of the NAMM news to talk through, so more hashtag NAMM 2020 will be on the way. To become a Patreon supporter, it costs you only $1 a month, and you can enjoy the podcast ad-free and early every week, plus be a part of our live audience and participate in our semi-regular Guitar Nerds live episodes. At the $5 tier, you can enjoy an entire extra episode every week, plus access to our entire back catalogue of mini-series like Question Hole, Bar Chords, and the Friday specials. And at the $10 tier, you can become an executive producer and enjoy all these benefits, plus you get the prestigious honour of having your name featured in our podcast outro song. You can follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds, and you can join our Facebook community at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Here we go. Jeffrey Wax, Mario Turan, Brian Einzler, Gavin Van der Linden, Jacob McGee, Marcus Al, Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Robert Butterworth, Neil Milton, Rob Barstow and Christian Lon Hansen, Keith Adams and Eric Firm, Andrew Good and Marin Peters, Richard Sutworth and Jack Hartmore. The Guitar Nerds! The Guitar Nerds! The Guitar Nerds! Yeah! The Guitar Nerds! The Guitar Nerds! The Guitar Nerds! Yeah! Matthew King and Ken Sayers, Adrian Day, Sean Arbo, and John Anglin, Rob Gruhl, Tucker Abaddon, Ernie Cooper, Russ Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Burke, and Aaron Sherman, Rob Grant, and Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, and Emery, James Brinker, Martin Clifford, Matt Bellamy, Jake Gray, Blake Wyland, and Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Hans Ams, Derek Rich, Rob Norvik, Robin Smith, Steve Merkel, J.D. Short, Carlos Mancha, Brad Page, and Andy McKenzie, Scott O.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.